ॐ गिरतिमिनन्दस्य जनार्जनफलकया चक्षुस्मिलितञ्जेन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. श्रीचैतन्यमनविष्टं स्तपितां तेन भूतले सायं कृतदा मायां ददति सफलन्तिकम्. वंशकपदुभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभैव च पतितनं पवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. Narada Muni has just completed telling of the pastime of Prahlad Maharaj and his being saved from his father Hiranyakashipu by Lord Nrisimhadev and his offering of wonderful prayers. Now, in text 48, Narada Muni continues. My dear Maharaj Yudhisthira, all of you, the Pandavas, are extremely fortunate, because Maharaj Yudhisthira has just heard about the fortune and glories of Prahlad Maharaj. All of you, the Pandavas, are extremely fortunate, for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, lives in your palace just like a human being. Great saintly persons know this very well, and therefore they constantly visit this house. From the beginning of Prabhupada's purport. After hearing about the activities of Prahlad Maharaj, a pure devotee should be very anxious to follow in his footsteps. But such a devotee might just be disappointed, thinking that not every devotee can come to the standard of Prahlad Maharaj. This is the nature of a pure devotee. He always thinks himself to be the lowest, to be incompetent and unqualified. Thus, after hearing the narration of Prahlad Maharaj's activities, Maharaj Yudhisthira, who was on the same standard of devotional service as Prahlad, might have been thinking of his own humble position. Narada Muni, however, could understand Maharaj Yudhisthira's mind, and therefore he immediately encouraged him by saying that the Pandavas were not less fortunate. They were as good as Prahlad Maharaj, because although Lord Nrisimhadev appeared for Prahlad, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his original form as Krishna, was always living with the Pandavas. Although the Pandavas, because of the influence of Krishna's yoga maya, could not think of their fortunate position, every saintly person, including the great sage Narada, could understand it, and therefore they constantly visited Maharaj Yudhisthira. So the Lord has so many devotees in this world, but Krishna himself lived with the Pandavas. He considered them his friend. He acted as their order carrier, their messenger, even the chariot driver of Arjuna, Partha Sarathi. And therefore, the Pandavas, with Krishna personally, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so intimately connected with them, are the most fortunate. So, Narada Muni is encouraging Yudhisthira Maharaj. He continues. The impersonal Brahman is Krishna himself, because Krishna is the source of the impersonal Brahman, just like the sun is the sunlight, because the sun is the source of the sunlight. The impersonal Brahman is Krishna himself, because Krishna is the source of the impersonal Brahman. He is the origin of the transcendental bliss sought by great saintly persons. Yet he, the Supreme Person, is your most dear friend and constant well-wisher, and is intimately related to you as the son of your maternal uncle. So maternal uncle is Vasudev. Kunti and Vasudev are brother and sister. Kunti, the mother of the Pandavas, and Vasudev, the father of Krishna. So intimately related. Just imagine how wonderful it is to have as the dearmost, best and intimate friend, well-wisher, relative, the supreme, all-attractive, beautiful, powerful, opulent, famous, supreme person, Krishna, who was always living with the Pandavas. So they were so fortunate. He is always like your body and soul. He is worshipable yet he acts as your servant and sometimes as your spiritual master. From Prabhupada's purport. That same Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, acted as the supreme friend and relative of the Pandavas. And sometimes he even acted as their servant by carrying a letter from the Pandavas to Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana. There was a letter that the Lord carried. He acted as a peacemaker because he wanted the Kurus to adjust their position so there wouldn't have to be a battle. Yudhisthira needed, and the other Pandavas, they were warriors, they were rulers, they needed land to rule. They couldn't get a job, anything like that. They were kings. They possessed a different nature. They had to rule. So they asked for just a little bit of land. A village each, so that they could at least rule something and act according to their dharma. And Duryodhana's reply was, I will not, cannot even spare enough land to drive a needle through. So he was so envious and petty. So that was the cause of war, due to his nature, his uncompromising nature and envious nature. So Krishna acted as the messenger of the Pandavas, like a menial servant of the Pandavas. Because Krishna was the well-wisher of the Pandavas, he also acted as guru by becoming the spiritual master of Arjuna. Arjuna accepted Krishna as his spiritual master, shishyasteham sarimam tam prapanam. And Krishna sometimes chastised him. For example, the Lord said, Asochanan vishochas tvam pragyavarams trabashase. While speaking learned words, you are mourning for what is not worthy of grief. The Lord also says, Kutas tva kajmalamidam vishame samupastitam. My dear Arjuna, how have these impurities come upon you? Such was the intimate relationship between the Pandavas and Krishna. In the same way, a pure devotee of the Lord is always with Krishna through thick and thin. His way of life is Krishna. This is the statement of the authority of Sri Narada Muni. So he's encouraging Yudhisthira. He's so intimate with you, the Lord. You are so fortunate. Exalted persons, this is text 50, like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, could not properly describe the truth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. May the Lord, who is always worshipped as the protector of all devotees by great saints, who observe vows of silence, meditation, devotional service, and renunciation, be pleased with us. Prabhupada's purport. The absolute truth is sought by different persons in different ways, yet he remains inconceivable. Nonetheless, devotees like the Pandavas, the gopis, the cowherd boys, Mother Yasoda, Nanda Maharaj, and all the inhabitants of Vrindavan do not need to practice conventional processes of meditation to attain the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for he remains with them through thick and thin. Therefore, a saint like Narada, understanding the difference between transcendentalists and pure devotees, always prays that the Lord will be pleased with him. So now, after glorifying Yudhisthira in the position of the Pandavas, which indirectly glorifies Lord Krishna, because he is with his devotees, he's Bhakta Vatsala, he was so intimate, and he's the Supreme Lord. So now Narada Muni is going to further glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead by explaining something of his relationship with Lord Shiva, because in the Vedic culture, there are so many who worship Lord Shiva. Generally, they don't worship him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They worship him as something like the personification of the impersonal. And usually, the worship of Lord Shiva is done to gain something material, at least by materialistic people, or some kind of powers. To gain some wealth or some powers or to remove an enemy or something like that. Lord Shiva's position is often thought of as the supreme manifestation of the Absolute. So now to glorify Krishna, Narada Muni will further clarify Lord Shiva's position. So he's going to tell of a pastime. My dear King Yudhisthira, Long, long ago in history, a demon known as Maya Danava, who was very expert in technical knowledge, reduced the reputation of Lord Shiva. In that situation, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, saved Lord Shiva. Bhagavan, the same Personality of Godhead, Krishna, who is the Parabrahman, the word Aisha Bhagavan Rajan, O King. This the same Bhagavan who is living with you. This Bhagavan who is living with you as your, sometimes as your guru, sometimes as your servant, sometimes as your otakari, as your cousin. He saved Lord Shiva when Maya Danava minimized his position. Text 52. Maharaj Yudhisthira said, for what reason did the demon Maya Danava vanquish Lord Shiva's reputation? How did Lord Krishna save Lord Shiva and expand his reputation again? Kindly describe these incidents. Narada Muni said, and again in this verse, it's Krishnena Nena, by Lord Krishna, Krishnena. So directly speaking of Lord Krishna. Narada Muni began to answer. He said, text 53, when the demigods, who are always powerful by the mercy of Lord Krishna, fought with the Asuras were defeated, and therefore they took shelter of Maya Danava, the greatest of the demons. This is called power brokering. When one is dealing with a power greater than oneself, one makes an alliance somehow or another with a power that one feels will be able to oppose that power or defeat that power. So the demons took shelter of the powerful Danava demon named Maya Danava, very, very, very powerful creator, manipulator of the material energy. So Maya Danava, the great leader of the demons, prepared three invisible residences and gave them to the demons. These dwellings resembled airplanes made of gold, silver, and iron, and they contained uncommon paraphernalia. My dear King Yudhisthira, because of these three dwellings, the commanders of the demons remained invisible to the demigods. Taking advantage of this opportunity, the demons, remembering their former enmity, began to vanquish the three worlds, the upper, middle, and lower planetary systems. Thereafter, when the demons had begun to destroy the higher planetary systems, the rulers of those planets went to Lord Shiva, fully surrendered unto him, and said, dear Lord, we demigods living in the three worlds are about to be vanquished. We are your followers, kindly save us. The most powerful and able Lord Shiva reassured them and said, do not be afraid. He then fixed his arrows to his bow and released them towards the three residences occupied by the demons. The arrows released by Lord Shiva appeared like fiery beams emanating from the sun globe and covered the three residential airplanes, which could then no longer be seen. Attacked by Lord Shiva's golden arrows, all the demoniac inhabitants of those three dwellings lost their lives and fell down. Then, because the demons had taken shelter of Maya Danava and he had given them those planes, Maya Danava came to the rescue of these asuras. Then the great mystic Danava, Maya Danava, dropped the demons into a nectarian well that he had created, Amrita. Amrita means death. Amrita means which will make one deathless. And we're going to hear about some Amrita in the next canto as well, if Krishna allows. When the dead bodies of the demons came in touch with the nectar, the Amrita, their bodies became invincible to thunderbolts. Endowed with great strength, they got up like lightning penetrating clouds. Seeing Lord Shiva very much aggrieved because Lord Shiva had defeated the demons and Maya Danava had brought them back to life and made them still stronger. So he was very aggrieved. His power had been diminished. He was disappointed. So then the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, considered how to stop this nuisance created by Maya Danava, bringing all the demons who were giving so much trouble to the demigods back to life every time they were killed by Lord Shiva. So the Lord decided he wanted to fix the situation. So he has his own ways of acting, very, very, very subtle and indirect. Then Lord Brahma became a calf, and Lord Vishnu a cow. And at noon, they entered the residences and drank all the nectar in the well. The demons could see the calf and cow, but because of the illusion created by the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the demons could not forbid them. The great mystic Maya Dhanava became aware that the calf and cow were drinking the nectar, and he could understand this to be the unseen power of providence. Thus he spoke to the demons, who were grievously lamenting. Maya Dhanava said, "What has been destined by the Supreme Lord for oneself, for others, or for both oneself and others, cannot be undone anywhere or by anyone, whether one be a demigod, a demon, a human being, or anyone else." This is Daivi. This is fate. This is providence. And these things are seen as no different from Krishna. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The Supreme Lord is one, Krishna, the Vishnu Tattva. Krishna expands himself into Vishnu Tattva, personal expansions, which are called Samsa, who control everything. Maya Dhanava said, "However I plan, you plan, or both of us plan, the Supreme Lord has planned what is to happen. No one's plan will be successful without his sanction." So this is the word, the final word on one's dealings within the material world, or even dealing in the, trying to attain the spiritual world. We can make so many plans, and maybe our plans are well thought out, very powerful, and we can join with our friends and together make plans. But our plans in and of themselves are insufficient to bring what we wish to fruition. Insufficient by themselves to bring what we wish to fruition. Because the ultimate sanctioning agent is the Lord. So ultimately everyone has to offer their obeisances to the Lord. Hundreds and millions of plans are made by all kinds of living entities, but without the sanction of the Supreme Lord, they are futile. Everyone wishes to become rich. Everyone wishes to become happy. Everyone wishes to become beautiful, strong, victorious in battle. But ultimately, though we may plan day and night, and ultimately, though we may have everything on our side according to our own estimation, ultimately everything depends on Krishna. Without the sanction of the Supreme Lord, they are futile. So that's what Maya Dhanava basically told the demons. He said, "I have met my match." Lord Shiva had made a plan to ruin my plan of the three kingdoms, to ruin your plan, O Asuras, to be successful. And I defeated that plan and disappointed Lord Shiva by allowing you to go into this, into the Amrita. But when Krishna came with his plan, so simple, with docile cow and calf to drink the Amrita, at that point, Maya Dhanava, practically speaking, surrendered. Even though he knew what was going on, he could not stop it. He said, "This is Krishna." Narada Muni continued, "Thereafter, Lord Krishna, by his own personal potency, consisting of religion, knowledge, renunciation, opulence, austerity, education, and activities, equipped Lord Shiva with all the necessary paraphernalia, such as a chariot, a charioteer, a flag, horses, elephants, a bow, a shield, and arrows. When Lord Shiva was fully equipped in this way, he sat down on the chariot with his arrows and bow to fight with the demons." From Prabhupada's purport, a little less than halfway through. "Although Lord Shiva is very powerful, he lost the battle to the Asuras, and therefore he was morose and disappointed. However, because he is one of the chief devotees of the Lord personally equipped him with all the paraphernalia for war. The devotee, therefore, must serve the Lord sincerely, and Krishna is always in the background to protect him, and if need be, to equip him fully to fight with his enemy. For devotees, there is no scarcity of knowledge or material requisites for spreading the Krishna consciousness movement." Prabhupada was encouraging his devotees to fearlessly and fully take up the mission of spreading Krishna consciousness throughout the world. But not only throughout the world thinly, but also from in every town and village. And not only in every town and village, but also from door to door. So Narada is continuing telling this pastime. My dear King Yudhisthira, the most powerful Lord Shiva joined the arrows to his bow, and at noon he set fire to all three residences of the demons and thus destroyed them. Seated in their airplanes in the sky, the inhabitants of the higher planetary systems beat many kettle drums. The demigod saints, pitis, siddhas, and various great personalities showered flowers on the head of Lord Shiva, wishing him all victory, and the apsaras began to chant and dance with great pleasure. O King Yudhisthira, thus Lord Shiva is known as Tripurari, the annihilator of the three dwellings of the demons, because he burnt these dwellings to ashes. Three cities, Ari, the enemy of the three cities. Being worshipped by the demigods, headed by Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva returned to his own abode. So he was worshipped by everyone, he was so glorious, because he was actually empowered by Krishna. Equipped to fight, to do his duty by Krishna. His energy is Krishna's energy, actually. He is carrying he is a guna avatar of Tamagun. He is carrying the full energy of for the destruction of the world by of Krishna. So he's a Krishna avatar, guna avatar. The Lord, Sri Krishna, appeared as a human being, Narada tells Yudhisthira. Yet he performed many uncommon and wonderful pastimes by his own potency. How can I say more about his activities than what has already been said by great saintly persons? Everyone can be purified by his activities simply by hearing about them from the right source. From Prabhupada's purport. Those who really seek the absolute truth come to the understanding that Krishna is everything. Vasudeva Savamiti. Such great souls are very rare. Nonetheless, if one studies the entire Bhagavad Gita as it is, Krishna is very easy to understand. The Krishna Consciousness Movement is just trying to make Krishna known all over the world as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam. If people take this movement seriously, their lives as human beings will be successful. So there is a mission statement for the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, to spread all over the world the knowledge that Krishna, it is Krishna who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because there are many, many religions in the world, and very many pious and religious people, and many people have a relationship with God where they surrender to Him and try to serve Him. Yes, it's true. But who knows who that person is, who is the Supreme Lord? Most have, at best, a vague conception. And therefore the tendency is to love the world more than Him, because the world is very specific and attractive. If we become attracted to the all-attractive, then the attraction to the material world will be necessarily minimized. And then, in any case, Prabhupada said, if people take this mission seriously, this movement seriously, to know and spread and develop a relationship with the Supreme Lord, their lives as human beings will be successful. Thus in the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 7th chapter, 10th chapter, 7th canto, 10th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, titled Prahlad, the Best Amongst Exalted Devotees. Now, we're going to quickly move to the final sections, chapters of this canto. Now this canto basically contains two parts, the seventh canto does. From the first 10 chapters are the answer to the question about the Lord's equality that Sukadev Goswami was asked by Maharaj Prickett. And in his answering that, Goswami told of Narada Muni's conversation with Maharaj Yudhisthira, and that led to the story of the pastime of Prahlad and Lord Nrisimhadev. And now, continuing, continuing with the discussion between Narada and Yudhisthira, the topic will take another turn. It would turn to how to develop devotional service, because naturally one should want to become like Prahlad. Naturally one wants this, because Prahlad was fearless, although within the material world and in the most difficult circumstance. And in this world, the most dominant of the material forces is fear. Ultimately, everyone is afraid of death. But continuously, there is one fear after another. But Prahlad, on the other hand, was as fearless as a young boy who was in the hands of his parents. So how to become like Prahlad in a practical way? So Maharaj, so the next 5 chapters will explain the Vanashrama system, the Vedic culture. In chapter 11, there's a basic, which we'll begin today if Krishna allows, there'll be a basic explanation of the different Varnas, or the Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, like that. In 12, the Ashramas, mainly Brahmachari Ashram and Vanaprastha Ashram. The 13th chapter, Sannyas. 14th chapter, householder life, and the 15th chapter, different grades of Brahmins. And then atop all of that, the topmost Brahmin, the topmost is devotees such as Yudhisthira Maharaj, and that's how this canto will end. But now, how the 11th chapter will begin. I will describe, after hearing how devotional service was so glorious by this describing the exalted character of Prahlad Maharaj, Maharaj Yudhisthira is going to inquire further. And this chapter, right in the beginning of this first section of it, the ultimate principle will be described, and we hear about that in the 7th verse. And then more religious principles will be described in the 8 through 12. Then social organization will be described. So many different things. And duties. Now this is more than I said, this was Varnas, but actually it's different Varnas, but different elements of the social organization, including Brahmins, Vaishyas, Kshatriyas, Sudras, the duties of women, and the duties of mixed castes. All this will be described. So here in the first verse, Sukadeva Goswami continued, after hearing about the activities and character of Prahlad Maharaj, which are adored and discussed among great personalities like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. So even great souls like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva discussed Prahlad Maharaj. He was so exalted because of his devotion to Lord Nrisimhadeva. Because after hearing about this, Maharaj Yudhisthira, the most respected king amongst exalted personalities, again inquired from the great sage Narada Muni in a mood of great pleasure. Maharaj Yudhisthira said, "My dear Lord, I wish to hear from you about the principles of religion by which one can attain the ultimate goal of life, devotional service. I wish to hear about the general occupational duties of human society and the system of social and spiritual advancement known as Vanashrama Dharma." Prabhupada's purport. Sanatan Dharma means devotional service. Sanatan Dharma means the constitutional activities of the soul, which is devotional service. The eternal activities of the soul. Now we see so many activities that are temporary in relationship to our body, our country, our family, but all these things are temporary. But what is the actual constitutional, natural, eternal position of the soul? That means devotional service. The word sanatan refers to that which is eternal, which does not change but continues in all circumstances. We have several times explained what the eternal occupation of the living being is. Indeed, it has been explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Jivera Sarupai Krishna Nityadas. The real occupational duty of the living entity is to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even if one prefers to deviate from this principle, he remains a servant, because that is his eternal position. But one serves Maya, the illusory material energy. The Krishna consciousness movement, therefore, is an attempt to guide human society to serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead instead of serving the material world with no real profit. Our actual experience is that every man, animal, bird, and beast, indeed every living entity, is engaged in rendering service. Even though one's body or one's superficial religion may change, every living entity is always engaged in the service of someone. Therefore, the mentality of service is called the eternal occupational duty. This eternal occupational duty can be organized through the institution of Varnashrama, in which there are four Varnas, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, and four Ashramas, Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. Thus, Yudhisthira Maharaj inquired from Narada Muni about the principles of Sanatana Dharma for the benefit of human society. In other words, how to organize society so that every person can make spiritual advancement towards becoming a devotee. One may not be able to develop his devotional service, his purity of heart, his love and faith of Krishna to the degree that Prahlad has, or Yudhisthira Maharaj, who is even more than Prahlad because Krishna is living with him. Krishna, the Supreme Person, what to speak of the residents of Vrindavan, who carry on the most intimate relationship with Krishna. But at least every human being should make some advancement. That's the principle of the Vedic culture. No one should regress to animal life. That's the principle of the Vedic culture. Every human should go forward towards engaging in his Sanatana Dharma. So the society is organized around the Varnashrama principles so that everyone can have his pleasures of material life, but in such a way that he will progress spiritually, at least some. So that's what these chapters are about. So Maharaj Yudhisthira continues. He's asking about Varnashrama that develops Sanatana Dharma, or Bhagavat Dharma. O best of the Brahmanas, you are directly the son of Prajapati, Lord Brahma. Because of your austerities, mystic yoga, and trance, you are considered the best of all Lord Brahma's sons. No one is superior to you in peaceful life and mercy, and no one knows better than you how to execute devotional service or how to become the best of the Brahmanas. Therefore, you know all the principles of confidential religious life, and no one knows them better than you. Indeed, Narada means Nara. Means humankind or man, and Da means give. So he bestows upon humankind, he's the giver to humankind of devotional service, and therefore he's considered the best of Lord Brahma's sons. Prabhupada's purport. Yudhisthira Maharaj knew that Narada Muni is the supreme spiritual master of human society who can teach the path of spiritual liberation leading to the understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Actually, it is for this purpose that Narada Muni compiled his Bhakti Sutra and gave directions in the Narada Pancharatra, two books by Narada Muni. To learn about religious principles and the perfection of life, one must take instructions from the disciplic succession of Narada Muni. Our Krishna consciousness movement is directly in the line of the Brahma Sampradaya. Narada Muni received instructions from Lord Brahma and in turn transmitted the instructions to Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva instructed his son Sukadeva Goswami, who spoke Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is described in the first canto, 4th through 7th chapters of the Bhagavatam. The Krishna consciousness movement is based on Srimad Bhagavatam, based on Vyasadeva and Sukadeva Goswami's speaking of Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. Because Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken by Sukadeva Goswami and Bhagavad Gita was spoken by Krishna, there is no difference between them. Because Krishna is the head of the Sampradaya, the information comes down through Vyasadeva and Sukadeva Goswami. So Krishna's words and the words of Sukadeva Goswami and Vyasadeva are none different. If we strictly follow the principle of the disciplic succession, we are certainly on the right path of spiritual liberation or eternal engagement in devotional service. So Yudhisthira continues. He asked Narada and glorified him as the right speaker. And now Narada Muni says, after first offering my obeisances unto Lord Krishna, the protector of the religious principles of all living entities, let me explain the principles of of the eternal religious system of which I've heard from the mouth of Narayan. Lord Narayan, along with his partial manifestation, Nara, appeared in this world through the daughter of Daksha Maharaj, known as Murti. He was begotten by Dharma Maharaj for the benefit of all living entities. Even now, he is still engaged in executing great austerities near the place known as Badrikashram. So he heard this. Narada Muni is saying he heard this from Narayan Rishi. So now he's going to speak. The Supreme Being, this is text 7. The Supreme Being, the Personality of Godhead, is the essence of all Vedic knowledge. So here is the basic principle of the Vedic culture. The Supreme Being, the Personality of Godhead, is the essence of Vedic knowledge, the root of all religious principles. All religious principles spring from him, and the memory of great authorities. O King Yudhisthira, this principle of religion is to be understood as evidence that the Lord is really everything. He is the essence of religion. To have a religion without the Lord is not really having a religion at all. On the basis of this religious principle, everything is satisfied, including one's mind, soul, and even one's body. So religion means actually to satisfy that Lord. And then when one satisfies the Lord, then ultimately one is satisfied on all levels. Here's Prabhupada's purport. We'll read from two parts. As stated by Yamaraj, Dhamman tu shakshad bhagavat pranitam. Yamaraj, the representative of the Lord who takes care of the living beings after their death, gives his verdict as to how and when the living being will change its body. He is the authority, and he says that the religious principles consist of the codes and laws given by God. No one can manufacture religion, and therefore manufactured religious systems are rejected by the followers of the Vedic principles. In Bhagavad Gita 15:15, it is said, Vedestra savara hameva vidya. Vedic knowledge means to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Therefore, whether one speaks of the Vedas, scriptures, religion, or the principles of everyone's occupational duty, all of them must aim at understanding Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:26 therefore concludes, Savaivam sam parodamo yaktir bhaktir hokshade ahaituki apratiyataya yatma subhasidati. In other words, religious principles aim at learning how to render transcendental loving service to the Lord. That service must be unmotivated and unchecked by material conditions. Then human society will be happy in all respects. So this is the purpose of all religious systems. And then the final paragraph of this purport, that when one performs that devotional service, it must be performed in relationship to Shastra and not be performed whimsically. Therefore, from all the evidence, the conclusion is that without bhakti, devotional service, there is no question of religious principles. God is the central figure in the performance of religious principles. Almost everything going on in this world as religion is devoid of any idea of devotional service and is therefore condemned by the verdict of Srimad Bhagavatam. Without devotional service, so-called religious principles are only cheating. So Prabhupada speaking strongly on this point. So religion ultimately means devotional service. So now, what are the religious principles? So that was the root principle, that the Lord is the root and the living entity must serve him. That is the actual essential principle of religion. Now, Narada Muni will speak the principles that lead to that principle. Because one might not be able to fully and directly take to pure devotional service immediately. So what are the subsidiary principles that will support one and bring one to that platform? These are the general principles, Narada Muni says, to be followed by all human beings. Truthfulness, mercy, austerity. Austerity means observing fasts on certain days of the month. Bathing twice a day. Tolerance. Discrimination between right and wrong. Control of the mind. Control of the senses. Nonviolence. Celibacy. Charity. Reading of scriptures. Simplicity. Satisfaction. Rendering service to saintly persons. Gradually taking leave of unnecessary engagements. Observing the futility of the unnecessary activities of human society. Remaining silent and grave and avoiding unnecessary talk. Considering whether one is the body or the soul. Distributing food equally to all living entities, both men and animals. Seeing every soul, especially the human form, as part of the Supreme Lord. Hearing about the activities and instructions given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the shelter of the saintly persons. Chanting about these activities and instructions, always remembering these activities and instructions, always remembering these, trying to render service, performing worship, offering obeisances, becoming a servant, becoming a friend, and surrendering one's whole self. O King Yudhisthira, these 30 qualifications must be acquired in the human form of life. Simply by acquiring these qualifications, one can satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So these bring one to the ultimate religious principle of full, pure devotional service. Prabhupada's purport. In order that human beings be distinct from the animals, the great Saint Narada recommends that every human being be educated in terms of the above-mentioned 30 qualifications. Nowadays, there's propaganda everywhere, all over the world, for a secular state. A state interested only in mundane activities. But if the citizens of the state are not educated in the above-mentioned good qualities, how can there be happiness? For example, if the total populace is untruthful, how can the state be happy? Therefore, without consideration of one's belonging to a sectarian religion, whether Hindu, Muslim, Christian, Buddhist, or any other sect, everyone should be taught to become truthful. Similarly, everyone should be taught to be merciful. And everyone should observe fasting on certain days of the month. Everyone should bathe twice a day, cleanse his teeth and body externally, and cleanse his mind internally by remembering the holy name of the Lord. The Lord is one, whether one is a Hindu, Muslim, or Christian. So this is very relevant on what are the principles that can unite all the disparate religions that tend to be sectarian. So there are religious principles that everyone could agree on and have allowed the diversity, but have the unity based on true religious principle that will actually elevate everyone. The Lord is one, whether one is a Hindu, Muslim, or Christian. Therefore, one should chant the holy name of the Lord, regardless of differences in linguistic pronunciation. Also, everyone should be taught to be very careful not to discharge semen unnecessarily. This is very important for all human beings. If semen is not discharged unnecessarily, one becomes extremely strong in memory, determination, activity, and the vitality of one's bodily energy. Everyone should be taught to be simple in thought and feeling, and satisfied in body and mind. These are the general qualifications of a human being. There is no question of a secular state or an ecclesiastical state. Unless one is educated in the above-mentioned 30 qualities, there cannot be any peace, ultimately. So nothing will work, whether you have a secular state or a religious state, unless people actually have the education to follow religious principles in their lives. No one will be happy. If sense gratification, unrestricted sense gratification is the principle, how will people be happy If people are merciless, how will they be happy? If they're liars, how will they be happy? How will the state be peaceful? So these are the basic principles that society should be based upon. Regardless, these are regardless of one's sectarian affiliation. Ultimately, it is recommended, Shravanam Kirtanam Chasya Smaranam Mahatam Gati Seveja Vanatir Dasyam Sakyam Atma Samarpanam. Everyone should become a devotee of the Lord. By becoming a devotee of the Lord, one automatically acquires the other qualities, because the quality of surrender to the Lord will give birth to the other qualities, the other good qualities. So even if one doesn't have any of these other qualities, but he's actually surrendered unto the Lord, one has to respect that person as a devotee, and gradually those good as exalted, and be careful not to criticize such a person, and gradually the other qualities, the other good qualities will develop. And even if they don't, it is dangerous to offend such a surrendered soul. So surrender is the one essential quality, actually. So everyone should become a devotee, because by becoming a devotee of the Lord, one automatically acquires the other qualities. Yasyasti bhakti bhagavad kinchana savagunas tatra samaste sara haravabhaktasya kuto mahaguna manaratena sato dabato bahi. In one who has unflinching devotional service to Krishna, all the good qualities and the demigods are consistently manifest. All the good qualities of Krishna and the demigods are consistently manifest. However, he who has no devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead has no good qualifications, because he is engaged by mental concoction and material existence, which is the external feature of the Lord. Because one's mind will always be running here and there trying to be happy in the material world, unless one doesn't acknowledge that he is a servant of Krishna and that his business is to please Krishna. That means the removal of false ego. And that is ultimately what is required. Otherwise the mind will run everywhere seeking happiness and satisfaction. Our Krishna consciousness movement, says Srila Prabhupada, therefore is all-embracing. Human civilization should take it very seriously and practice its principles for the peace of the world. Those who have been reformed, there are 30 principles that can be organized into the Vanashrama system. And so there's the principles, and then there's the Vanashrama system, which organizes people to follow the principles. And that will gradually allow one to attain Bhagavad Dharma. This is the principle. This is what Narada Muni is explaining to Maharaj Yudhisthira, how to develop devotional service there. There's the goal, Bhagavad Dharma. There are religious principles that will elevate one, and then the organization of the religious principles is called Vanashrama Dharma. Text 13, which will be the last report that we shall read today. Those who have been reformed by the Gobadan ceremony and other prescribed reformatory methods performed with Vedic mantras and without interruption, and have been approved by Lord Brahma, or Dvijas, or twice born. Such Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, purified by their family traditions and by their behavior, should worship the Lord, study the Vedas, and give charity. In this system, they should follow the principles of four ashramas, Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. See, this is the Vana. The ashrams are based on the Varna. Prabhupada's purport. After giving a general list of 30 qualifications for one's behavior, Narada Muni now describes the principles of the four Varnas and four ashramas. A human being must be trained in the above-mentioned 30 qualities. Otherwise, he is not even a human being. Then, among such qualified persons, the Vanashrama process should be introduced. In the Vanashrama system, the first ceremony for purification is Gavadhana, which is performed with mantras at the time of sex for propagating a good child. One who uses sex life not for sensual pleasures, but only to beget children according to the reformatory method, is also accepted as a brahmachari. One should not waste semen on sensual pleasure, violating the principles of Vedic life. Restraint in sex is possible, however, only when the populace is trained in the above-mentioned 30 qualities. Otherwise, it is not possible. Even if one is born in a family of dvijas or twice born, Brahman, Kshatriya, or Vaishyas, if they have not followed the reformatory process, he is called a dvija bandhu, not one of the twice born. But a friend of the twice born. The whole purpose of this system is to create good population. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, when women are polluted, the populace is Vana Sankar. And when the Vana Sankara population increases, the situation of the entire world becomes hellish. Therefore, all the Vedic literature strongly warn against creating Vana Sankara population. When there is Vana Sankara population, the people cannot be properly controlled for peace and prosperity, regardless of great legislative assemblies, parliaments, and similar bodies. Questions or comments? Yes.
One question for me. I'm not particularly into today's class, but I asked me to ask this. She read in the one of Krishna's pastimes, the one regarding Shishupal.
From the 10th canto?
It's from there.
Yes.
Yeah. And after Krishna killed Shishupal with his flesh and this. His finger was bleeding.
Krishna's finger?
Yes, apparently.
Did she read this in the Srimad Bhagavatam or some other book?
She read it in the Bhagavatam or
Amrita Chitta Katha comic books.
Or from the Krishna storybook. I'm not sure whether that's verifiable, but then again, I read in the Ramayana a few days ago also a similar fight that Lord Ram was having with
Why don't we stick to one at a time. First of all, I never read that in the Krishna book or in the Bhagavatam, so I'm not sure where she read it. Maybe you could find that out. Did anyone, maybe I missed it, did anyone ever notice that?
Well, so I didn't find the second part of the Krishna book in the temple to verify that as well. So I was not sure. But the principle she asked was, and I saw that in the Roman Lord Ram's book also, was basically that Lord Ram was fighting and he was bleeding and he was in his pool of his own blood. So the question is,
which Ramayana is this?
The one I got from Siddharam Prabhu I'm not sure which Maharashtra is in this question.
Must be.
Yeah, he gave me that book. And that one.
I can't say anything about that. But what I do know is that Krishna can do anything he wants, and he has amazing pastimes, and he got shot by a hunter. But there is no difference between Krishna inside and outside. But yet, when Krishna was shot by Bhishma rather, in the battle of Kurukshetra, he had blood coming, but he doesn't bleed like a human being. He doesn't have skin, and below the skin there's veins and capillaries. And below that, there's different types of muscles and bones. Krishna's body isn't like that. Krishna's body is composed of Satchidananda Vigraha, of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. Yet, he can bleed, because when his leela is Naralila, when his pastimes are mimicking those of a human being, to evoke sentiments, loving sentiments in his devotees, he can do these things. But whether specifically when Krishna chopped off the head of Sisupal with a Sushant Chakra, whether he bled or not, I can't say. I didn't notice that in the Krishna book. But yet there's that principle of Krishna's spiritual body. Even if he did bleed, that blood would be not different from Krishna. It would be composed of Satchidananda and just manifest by Krishna for his pastimes. But more than that, I can't say.
Didn't Prabhupada give him some
coffee? Who? Prabhupada gave him coffee?
Oh. And that's why Krishna gave the fire of that. When she was destroyed, that was the principle, yeah. He was paying back her gratitude.
Great.
I
read that from the Back to Godhead magazine, a recent Back to Godhead magazine. It was in there from Mahabharat, I think so.
His translation.
Rami Janina. But in any case, so many wonderful things are going on. But there's a principle. The principle is that this is Naralila, or Krishna's activities that mimic the human activities. Later on, when Krishna was fighting Salva, Salva brought a Maya Vasudeva and killed him, an imitation Vasudeva, and killed him before Krishna's eyes. And Krishna started lamenting like an ordinary person whose father's been killed. But this is just Leela for Krishna. If he bleeds, it's transcendental blood for Leela to bring out the sentiment, the loving sentiments, to increase the ecstasy of his devotee, like he did with Bhishma.
I think the reason
yes.
That question was asked was because I remember one of Prabhupada's lecture about, you know, at one point there were so many of his bogus gurus claiming to be God, and he had made a comment that to see if they bleed, or something to that effect. Actually, Prabhupada said that they have veins rather than actually bleed.
Yes.
So that's why I asked that.
Oh, one time Prabhupada told me about one bogus fellow claiming to be God. He said, he has to go to the dentist, the hospital, because he has a toothache, and he doesn't consider, oh my God, if I have a toothache, I have to go to the hospital. Krishna never grew older than 25, like that, even though he was 125. On the battle of Kurukshetra, field of Kurukshetra, he was quite old, and he had neither gray hair nor wrinkles. So why does Krishna do these things? That's for the to bring out the ecstasy of his devotees. He cut teeth when he was a little boy. And he probably cried when he was doing that, so Mother Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj would be their ecstasy and their parental rasa would be evoked. Thank you. Yes.
Was that to reassure him that Krishna was staying inside of the Vedic? And to reassure Mahashi said he was a dear devotee and he was a
That wasn't the purpose that I mentioned, but that sounds also that would be naturally coming to Yudhisthira Maharaj. How he always protects. Especially if you're talking about arming his devotees and Kurukshetra, and he was looming. But Krishna's position is clearly explained as the support of Lord Shiva there. Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Narada Muni Yudhishthira Maharaj ki jai, Prahlad Maharaj ki jai, Lord Nrisimha Dev ki jai, Gaur Prema.